The Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act, FITARA, is still attached to the 2015 Defense Authorization Bill the House passed and the Senate will debate this week. The latest version of FITARA looks a little bit different than the original. Still, the new bill would hand civilian agency CIOs more authority, prioritize hiring of specialty IT experts, and maximize use of data centers. Trey Hodgkins is Senior Vice President of Public Sector at the Information Technology Alliance, a division of the Information Technology Industry Council. He joins me now to discuss what we can expect from this compromise version of FITARA. Trey, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
All right. So what of the original FITARA, must be 2 years old now, actually made it through that is still attached to the bill the Senate's looking at this week?
Well, the primary piece that's there is the CIO authorities and enhancing those. We like to characterize it as actually putting things back on a keel that was established under Clinger-Cohen. A lot of the authorities have been eroded in various agencies over the years, and we think this puts it back on a better footing. It also puts the CIOs at the table for a lot of the investment decisions where they may not be sitting at the table today. So that's the primary element that is still there. The other piece that was common, at least in title, is the data center consolidation piece. There's already an initiative going on across the federal government to optimize and then consolidate data centers, and this sort of codifies that initiative and requires further guidance, but it really puts it in statute. I would say the same thing of one piece of it codifies the data.gov, the IT dashboard, some of those elements that are exposing investment information about IT systems, and it also codifies the portfolio stat, which many agencies, if not all, are currently doing now with their IT investments. So those things are common, and many of them are ongoing, and this is really sort of putting them in statute so that they don't go away. They seem to have earned their stripes as investment and management tools that are good to keep.
And what about the bureau-level CIOs? Would those still exist? I think the original version made only the departmental CIO have that title of CIO.
It enhanced the authority for the departmental CIO to have a better voice in the hiring of the bureau CIOs, but it does not give them complete authority or hiring and firing authority we did see in some earlier versions. That was one of the challenges that the lawmakers had in trying to advance the legislation.
So, for example, HHS CIO would only still have limited authority over what happens at, say, CMS, or the same thing for Treasury and IRS.
Well, they're going to have more authority, but they're not necessarily going to have direct hiring authority. He will be able to approve the appointment or the hiring of someone else, but he's not necessarily going to be picking that individual. He'll have a voice in the decision-making. And what they will have, though, is greater control over the spending of the dollars and at the Bureau, the IT investment decisions that Bureau CIO would be making. The departmental CIO will have a greater role in approving and managing that process.
Because that seems logical, given that so many departments, well, not all of them, but a lot of departments have one big Bureau that represents most of their investments in people, like CMS at HHS or IRS at Treasury.
That's true. This better aligns, the departmental policies and strategies with the different components and bureaus, and it also will bring the manpower, the boots on the ground, under greater management control of the departmental CIO. So you can have more enterprise-level strategy and the ability to execute in a little better fashion, certainly through the investment controls, but also through, hopefully alignment of thinking and, philosophies about how to proceed and technologies to pursue for different agencies and bureaus.
So that could really strengthen the hand of, say, the Homeland Security CIO, where you've got a lot of roughly equally sized pieces, each with their own CIOs and investment portfolios.
Well, that's been, people frequently point to DHS as one of the agencies out there where we have all these disparate component bureaus and agencies who have some semi-autonomy, and many of them exercise that robustly. And this is intended to better align what those agencies are doing from a technology standpoint, the investment decision-making, in a more vertical fashion, so that you have strategic level, enterprise level decisions that can be the departmental CIO can be involved in, so that you don't have multitudes of email systems, for example, that continue to be purchased. You have, you know, those things are going to begin. We're going to see better alignment around those kinds of things.
And we should point out this FITARA applies to civilian side of government, even though it's part of the NDAA.
That's absolutely correct. One of the major sticking points when it was in the Senate and its ability to move forward was whether or not it applied under Title 10, the Department of Defense. And the compromise was that there is alternative language in the defense bill regarding the CIO role at DOD. This language only applies to the civilian agencies.
All right, I want to get to that CIO language in a moment at DOD. We're speaking with Trey Hodgkins. He's Senior Vice President of Public Sector at the Information Technology Alliance, which is part of the Information Technology Industry Council, the ITIC. And what of the original FITARA did not make it through so far?
Well, there were provisions on cloud computing. There are some workforce provisions in there, but they're not as robust as we started with. And then there's some additional elements here regarding software that are sort of new. One of them requires the government to move in the direction of creating an FSSI, or Strategic Sourcing Initiative, for software. And then the other is to establish the ability for the government to license software with one license. It's those are unique or relatively new concepts in the federal government, but the idea is that you buy one license and it allows for unlimited use. One of the challenges on the side of trying to do those kinds of things with the one license is that the government doesn't really have a good inventory of its own hardware or how many users it has, and so it can't tell us that today, and so it is difficult to start talking about how much of an enterprise license do I need to acquire and what would the cost be. The strategic sourcing initiatives, industry has said, and we have been part of that conversation, that strategic sourcing is very new, and there's a lot of questions. In fact, there's some language that Congress contemplated this year about GAO doing some more investigations into the effectiveness of strategic sourcing. And while it's a good idea that the government try and consolidate its commodity type buys, when we start talking about software, it's unclear that the government is willing to buy in a more monolithic fashion. It hasn't shown that in the past, and so that's something we have to determine if there's a viable way forward.
Yeah, what does industry think of all of this, especially that software licensing provision? Seems like the potential for leaving a lot of profit on the table is there.
Well, it's not so much that. It is a question as to what does it mean. Some companies have figured this out when they have large enterprise-level single-use licenses. Others have not done this yet. And then, of course, you overlay that with all the government unique requirements that are going to come with software. They don't set, for example, the end user license agreements that you or I would have to accept to turn on an operating system on a computer. The government doesn't accept those. They force those at companies to rewrite them, even if they're globally available commercial products. So there are nuances of that sort that have to be worked through, and those are the things we'll start talking about now. That there's an initiative and statute that we have to go forward.
And turning to the management of the DOD CIO office, you said there's alternative language in the bill that applies to combining several jobs into one new undersecretary. So what would happen there?
That's correct. They are going to be taking the role that was used to be, or I guess until to at this point in time. This won't take effect until the next administration, but the role is currently called the Deputy Chief Management Officer. They're going to take that role as well as the role of the CIO and put the two together under one person. And they will also be elevating the position to where it is the equivalent of the other undersecretaries. Now, they won't call it an undersecretary, but it will have the equivalence within the department of an undersecretary. So it's going to have a major departmental management role, and it'll be responsible for all the management operations and all of the chief information operations. It'll be, they'll be dual-hatted. We presume they'll create some sort of a structure where you'll have under that individual some hierarchies were devoted to management and hierarchies devoted to information technology. But we supported this because it's been some years now, but the role of the CIO in the department is being elevated again to be near the secretary. The industry has said, and we believe statistically it's borne out, that the greater connection you have around IT investment decisions and management decisions and the senior executives in a department, the better the outcome, because you have executive buy-in, and you have executive participation in the decision-making, and those things lend themselves to success on the back end. And so we support this move as a way to elevate the role of information technology investment and management in the department.
I guess there's the perception that under the old system with the separate deputy director for management and the separate CIO in either side, not a whole lot happened that they had hoped would happen, such as, you know, the overhaul of DoD business systems.
Well, those things continue to move forward. I think that the roles were, one, the roles were being defined, certainly from the chief management officer perspective. That's a relatively new role. And, they did make progress. They made a lot of progress in moving those systems into things like a portfolio stat type assessment. Those things are now going on at the department, and it's driving some of the decisions they're making, they have made some improvements. On the CIO side, they have made a lot of improvements. You know, we see initiatives to adopt cloud. We see better cybersecurity. There's a variety of activities going on there that are opening up new technologies to the department, making new opportunities for companies, as well as securing their networks. So both of those roles have been robust activities, and I think that this strengthens the activity and gives them also a better ability, to engage at senior levels of the department in their investments and decision-making.
So if Ash Carter is confirmed as defense secretary, though, he won't get the chance to really enjoy the benefits of this combined position because it doesn't take a place until February 2017.
It has a delayed implementation. That's correct.
All right. So anything else that people should know that's in there that's going to affect procurement? I guess that's a pretty good list as it is.
It is. It's not as much as we started with, but we believe overall these are good changes that move the conversation in the direction we hope it would move. And, I think this also lays the groundwork for us to continue the conversation going into next year with the Armed Services Committees and others in the community that want to continue discussing acquisition reform.
All right. Trey Hodgkins is Senior Vice President of Public Sector at the Information Technology Alliance for Public Sector, part of the Information Technology Industry Council. As always, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Tom. Happy holidays.
And you too.